been poured on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get in. No timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
I've already been vindicated, not by a lie detector test, just by the text messages my players have sent me. Because I have to answer to one person, whatever God you believe in. That's the most important thing.
Do you feel comfortable that you will be clear of any charge coming your way in the future?
1,000%.
And that is the voice of Rick Pitino with his sit-down conversation with our Jay Billis. I'm Seth Greenberg, and welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic. Shocked. That's my reaction. Why would Rick Pitino sit down and defend himself at this moment in time? Sometimes you've got to just let things breathe and let things happen. I'm not sure we learned a whole lot from that interview, except that Rick Pitino believes that because his players love him and he's passed a lie detector test, that it was worthwhile to get that out into the media. Dan Dokic, what do you have to say?
Yeah, I guess. It's like, all right, great. Jay threw him some, lobbed it up there, and Pitino, it was an infomercial. It was an infomercial for Pitino to get out a couple of things. He passed a lie detector. And, it's not a lie if you believe it.
And you're going to hear that interview in its entirety right now, and when we come back, we'll react.
Rick, when you first learned of the federal investigation, the indictments, 10 people being arrested, what was your reaction?
Well, I was actually doing a podcast with David Novak, who the retired CEO of Yum Brands, and we were having a great time doing it. He's a friend. And all of a sudden, my assistant opened the door, which I found strange, and said, you need to end this, and something has happened. And I was blown away by it. We sat there. We didn't know anything about it. We had no details. All of a sudden, one of my assistant coaches was picked up by two gentlemen in a car. I thought he was being arrested. Another was picked up at the airport, being talked to. None of them were arrested. They just were being talked to. And then a short time afterwards, they came into my office and said, do you need an attorney? Would you talk to us? And I said, no, I don't need an attorney. Come on and sit down and let's talk.
When you say they, who?
FBI agents.
So the day that the arrests were made, the FBI was in your office?
Yes.
How many people?
There were two. They were probably different ones for one assistant and different ones with me. My interviews were extremely generic in did I know anything about this? Did I know anything about that? Are you aware of this? And I wasn't aware of what was going on at the time until, obviously, the facts came out later.
When did you learn that University 6 was Louisville?
Just by reading the documents with Kenny Kleiner, SID.
And what was your feeling how did you feel when that became clear?
I was flabbergasted. I couldn't fathom that to be the case. I wanted more facts. I wanted more information. Ever since the Andre McGee thing, every single day at every meeting, these statements were made. Guys, if you're thinking about jaywalking, you'll be fired. I said, so understand the how serious this is. You must be totally compliant to every minuscule rule, or you will be fired. Your careers will end. I said, not only my careers, your careers. So understand what's at stake here. Because this was a couple of people who were new to our staff.
When you came into work the next day, what was the feeling like for you then?
You're obviously dejected, but you still don't know what's going on. The following day, I believe I was called in by the president and the head of the board of trustees. And I knew this is an interim president who has no experience in athletics at all. I don't think in 20 years he's been to an athletic event. And the head of the Board of Trustees. Let me start by saying this is the Board of Trustees was fired. All Louisville people were fired by the governor a year or two ago. An entirely new board made up of University of Kentucky graduates, a different array of different people dealing with the president who was then terminated. So this is not anybody familiar with U of L athletics, so to speak. So when this happened, I was called in by these two people. They said, would you resign? I said, absolutely not. I said, let's get the facts out here before we rush to anything. We were sitting on a great team. We're sitting on a great recruiting class. Let's calm down a little bit here. But they said no. And the toughest thing was, Jay, obviously when you meet your team and suddenly a house falls on you for the first time, and I want no sympathy for, because anybody can be terminated. I've had dear friends in the professional ranks get terminated. It's part of our industry. But now you have to speak to your team. And we had a big summer. We thought we were sitting on something really, really special. Incredible group of young men as people, incredible group as players, maybe the best talent I've had at Louisville. And I now have to speak to them. And I told them, I said, look, guys, you all know, because I recruited every one of you, that I would never give you anything of any type of inducement. You know that. But right now, some facts have to come out. I love you guys dearly. I want to coach you guys badly. I'll be back to coach you. But right now, I have to take some time off. I want you to work extremely hard for the staff that's still here. Let's get our goals. Let's win this whole thing. I love you all very much. I'll be back. And that's when I left it. Went upstairs to get my belongings, and they were changing the locks on my door. And everything inside, I was gone. And that afternoon, I'm now a Miami resident, and all my belongings are still there, locked out of my office.
Were you informed right away that you were on leave?
Yes, they told me that you're on leave. Nothing registered about unpaid, paid, nothing. All I was thinking about is getting back with my guys. We have something special that's going to happen.
The federal government is alleging that a Louisville assistant requested a payment from an Adidas representative to provide to a Louisville recruit, and it was alleged to be $100,000. Did you know anything about that?
No. One of the toughest things you have to do, and hope you never do it, is take a lie detector test. You have a blood pressure machine, you're wired up, and I was asked two questions. I said, and I want you to ask me if any other recruits in my tenure were ever given anything. And he said, that's not what we're here for. We're here for, did you have any knowledge of the Bowen family getting any money? Did you have any knowledge of an Adidas transaction? And I answered, absolutely not, on both questions, and passed the lie detector test. So I had no knowledge of any of this. And I'm not sure that my assistant coach is involved in this, because I'm not sure. My assistant coaches have not been arrested, indicted. So I'm not sure what involvement the one assistant has in this. And we've got to wait for the facts to come out.
Should you have known?
Well, Jay, I take full responsibility for anybody I hire. There's no question about it. I take ownership of that. So you may say, okay, people have said to me, you know, you after the Andre McGee thing, you need to really vet your assistant coaches. Well, I did vet my assistant coach. He was a high school coach at Oldsmar Christian. I went in there, I was recruiting one of his players. He was making $13,000 a year. I was really impressed with the way he was teaching and coaching, the X's and O's of it, his mannerisms, the way he was teaching. Then I started running a back check on him because I wanted somebody a little older. They told me the NCAA, Andre McGee, was too young. But, Jay, he was older than a couple of guys you know who I hired and started out in the business. One was Billy Donovan, who was just out of college, didn't like Wall Street, and said, Coach, I want to get into coaching. I said, come on, Billy, get in your car, drive to Kentucky, you'll be a graduate assistant. The other person at Providence College said the same thing. He was a JV coach, a McQuaid Jesuit in Rochester, New York. His name was Jeff Van Gundy. I vetted him and gave him the same way I vetted all the other guys. Andre McGee played for me. Two beautiful parents, a Dean's List student, a captain of the team, carried himself well, never got in any trouble at all, knew the rules, knew what we were all about. And he did the wrong thing, and I have to forgive him for that. But all the other guys I've dealt with, over 30 assistant coaches I've nurtured, and now they're very successful people in the business. I vetted them out. This high school coach I vetted out. But I told them, more so than even all the other coaches, every single day, if you do the slightest little thing wrong and are not totally compliant, your career is over. You were making $13,000. Now you're making a few hundred thousand. and you have a bright career, every single day I told all the staff, do the right thing. Make sure you do the right thing. So should I have known? I take ownership for hiring anybody. But I've hired some great ones. Did I make some mistakes in the last couple of hires? 100% yes. But I believe that they were the right people. And I went in this direction because I got a little tired of assistant coaches coming in for 2 years and leaving. Now, they did a fabulous job for me. But I lost all continuity in recruiting because you start out recruiting sophomores. They get in with these players, and then they become a head coach, and I lose that continuity. So I wanted to hire people a little younger, like Kevin Willard of Seton Hall, who can stay with me for 9 years, and we could really have some continuity in the recruiting world.
I have heard reasonable people ask the question, how could he not have known? How do you respond to that?
Jay, all I can tell you is I don't answer to those people. I answer to my players who have been over the top in support of me. I answer to my assistant coaches and, most important, my family. But the one person you got to answer to in life is God. And I sit here today and tell you, should I have known that somebody walked into a hotel room? And that I don't see how I could possibly know. In the other case, people say, how did you not know? Well, there were security in the building, assistant coaches, 20 managers. So we monitor social media. Not one thing came out in social media in that other case. So should I know, let's just say I take ownership for who I hired and take full responsibility for that.
When you look at the alleged payment from Adidas to Brian Bowen as family on behalf of Louisville, it's alleged. Does that make sense to you, or is it something you've seen in other places?
It's bizarre to me. First of all, you follow the University of Louisville. It's one of the premier programs in all of college basketball. But I've had maybe in 16 years, I've had 6, 7 McDonald's All-Americans, not top-tier ones. I think I've only had one top 10 player in 16 years. So our program was built a different way. It's built with guys who we thought were great players, but maybe these ranking systems didn't. Guys like Terry Rozier and Donovan Mitchell and Gorky Zhang. Russ Smith, who was rated a 2-star athlete, ended up a first-team college All-American. We did it a different way. Not saying this way was wrong or our way was wrong, but we went after passionate, hungry, and driven people that we thought could be a top 10, 15, 20 player. And they ended up as those players. So we recruited a different way. As far as Bowen's concerned, look, I'm not sure. I have no factual information on the statement I'm going to make right now. I don't believe Brian Bowen knew a single thing about this. I totally believe that the mom knew nothing about this because of the text message she sent me. So this Brian Bowen is a terrific young man. He fell into our lap in recruiting. Obviously, now with the circumstances behind it, there's more to it than meets the eye. But I believe Brian Bowen chose the University of Louisville because he loved the visit, he loved his future teammates, and he wanted to play for me. I don't think he's involved in this in any way. Now, am I being naive? I don't know. I just believe in that young man.
When Brian Bowen committed to Louisville, you were at a press conference and said essentially that you felt you got lucky, that that you just said he fell into your lap. Given that in the recruiting, should that have raised red flags for you to look further into it?
Well, I asked him about that when we sat at the meeting. I said, I got a phone call. Would you be interested in him? I said, well, why Louisville? I saw him play one time against another young man I was recruiting. And he played for the number one high school team in the nation. We tried to get him recruit him, but he wasn't interested. So he said that he wanted to go to Arizona. But Trier and Alkins put their name in the draft, and they came back. And now everybody's roster's filled up, and he wasn't going to get any playing time. He saw that Donovan Mitchell went pro, and he felt it would possibly be a good fit. That was his explanation behind it.
Well, who was the phone call from?
It was this guy, Christian Dawkins.
What's your relationship with Christian Dawkins?
I don't have a relationship with him. I knew him casually back in the day. He ran a Dorian's Pride AAU program. I recruited a young man, Jalen Johnson, from that program. He texted me 3 or 4 years later after that and said, you may remember me. I ran Dorian's private Jalen Johnson. Would you have interest in Brian Bowen?
Was that the only interaction you had with Christian Jenkins? Was the text about
a few text messages throughout the years? Congratulations on something, but I had never been in direct contact with Christian Jenkins.
Was Christian Jenkins around the program? Did you see him around?
No, he's never around our program because he lived in Michigan. This was the first I've heard of him. One time he told me about a player, Josh Jackson. He said, watch him. He's a terrific player. I said, well, that's obvious. And then the other was now Brian Bowen. Outside of that, he recommended a few players to watch, but I would say maybe less than four players throughout the last 10 years.
Would you ever see him on the road when you were recruiting?
Never.
What was your relationship, or what is your relationship, with Jim Gatto, the director of global marketing for Adidas?
I knew Jim Gatto better through his dad. I knew his dad very well. Super guy, high school coach in New York City. Great guy, great family. And I think Jim Gatto is a wonderful man. He's never once ever said, I'm going to help you out and pay a kid money or do anything like that. Never even brought anything up like that. Never talked about money. Talked about, obviously, when we signed a major, major $160 million program, we knew he was behind it. But I was close, obviously, to this fellow Murphy and some of the other people at higher-ups. And my communication with Gatto was more about a contract with Terry Rozier. Terry Rozier lost his contract with Adidas. I called him up and said, look, I'd like to get the contract back. This young man's going to blow up and be a great player. And then he said, It's really out of my hands. I can't help you. I went to the people above him and said, look, I'm telling you, Terry Rozier is going to be a great pro. You need to keep him with Adidas because he lost his contract.
Did you ever talk with Jim Gatto about recruiting, about players?
No, absolutely not.
How often would you communicate with Jim Gatto?
Very, very minimal. I'm not into the shoe. 2 years ago, I had a press conference and said the shoe companies need to get out of our business. I'm not into having any shoe company help me with the recruit. Okay, now the fact that they have Adidas Nation and they have players there, and my players can work as counselors, so on, and they, you know, unfortunately in this business, Jay, and if you have somebody with Nike or somebody with Under Armour, your chances are cut back from getting them. You have to recruit the people at the Adidas circuit more than the people at Nike and Under Armour, and that's one of the problems with our industry.
What kind of access did Jim Gatto or anyone from Adidas have to the basketball program by virtue of the contract?
Very little. They had very little. And I don't think they wanted access. A week before this broke, they were doing a whole thing, testing area. They took a whole gymnasium and they were testing the shoes and using our players and showing it how it works. That was the first real interaction we've ever had with Adidas in terms of getting involved with their brand.
Did you know that any of your assistants were having communications with Jim Gatto?
No, not to my knowledge. If they were, it was about, I knew Kenny Johnson. If I tell him, look, I got some communication about, we want to get our players into Adidas Nation. When I say players, University of Louisville basketball players, to work Adidas Nation because they get a chance to play in front of all the pro scouts. So we had three or four that were going to do it. Dang, Nadel couldn't do it. He was hurt, so we had Ray Spalding and B.J. King go, and Donovan Mitchell the year before. So most of our communication and assistant coaches was about that, or about AAU programs that are represented by Adidas players, that type of stuff, but nothing to do with payments or anything of that nature.
So as head coach at Louisville, your interaction with anyone from Adidas would be how often?
Well, based on my text messages that I turned over to the FBI voluntarily, based on that, it was very minimal, maybe two or three times a year.
What's it like to be interviewed by the FBI?
Well, it's worse to have a lie detector test because that's real. They take you back to high school and they ask you questions about what happened in high school and you have a blood pressure thing on you. That's much worse.
So let's explore that. Why did you choose to take a lie detector test?
My attorney said, would you take a lie detector test from this gentleman who worked for the FBI? He specializes in giving lie detector tests, teaches it all around the country. I said, no, tell him to come on in.
Now, back to the FBI. What was it like being interviewed by
the FBI? Well, I wanted to know the information. What's going on here? He said, they asked me, did I have any knowledge of a meeting in Las Vegas room? I said, of course not. did you have any knowledge of this? And they asked me questions. How does it work? How does this system work with shoe companies and the whole bit? They were asking me questions about that.
Did the FBI inform you before they started that you were not to lie to them and the penalties for that?
I knew that. I was fully aware of that.
How many people were there in the room?
Two.
And both FBI agents?
Yes. One local and one federal.
Did you only speak to them that one time? Or?
Yes. And I volunteered with the U.S. attorney. I volunteered to come in at any time, tell them what I know, what I don't know. And I've been totally compliant with them. And any way I can help with that investigation, I would be there.
How do you feel about the way the University of Louisville has treated you since this news came out?
When you say the University of Louisville, the people there, the love of my life, the other coaches, I worship the ground that my players walk on. That's how much I love them. But to me, this board of trustees locking me out of my office, telling me I'm dismissed before facts came out, let it develop. They're not the University of Louisville. They're a board hired by the governor to deal with the president situation a while ago. They're not the University of Louisville that I know. So I harbor no bitterness. I'll get better rather than bitter. But I don't believe it's the University of Louisville. So the University of Louisville didn't treat me that way. This board of trustees did. And a couple of them. I shouldn't put them all in one lump sum.
Well, you can see how emotional this is for you. What was the most emotional time in this to date?
Speaking to the players.
Have you been able to have interaction with the players since you last spoke with them?
What I told them is that, guys, David Padgett is one of you. He played for me. He's like a son to me, like you are. Give him everything you got. Give it to him. Win it all. But I said, I'm not going to be in contact with you. It's his team now.
In mentioning David Padgett, how do you react to Louisville hiring Padgett as interim coach when he was in the same office as all of the rest of the coaches? So I guess my question is, if you are presumed to have known, is it reasonable to assume or presume that David Padgett wouldn't have known?
Well, I didn't know. And that's in front of God, not in front of anybody else. And in front of God, David Padgett didn't know. He's a wonderful young man who does it the right way, as well as, and I'll repeat it again, as well as the Jeff Van Gundys and the Billy Donovans of the world and the Mick Cronins and the Kevin Willards and the Ralph Willards and the Jim O'Briens and the Tubby Smiths and Kevin Keats and all those people. They did it the right way. A couple didn't. And I take ownership for that.
But what does that say about the decision makers?
It was a great decision. You're sitting on a national championship contender. These kids deserved. It's all about, everybody says it's about the student athletes. Well, bringing in a guy after all the summer, who knows the press? Who knows the motion offense as well as David Padgett? He's played it. He's directed it. He's totally innocent of doing anything wrong. He played for his father, who's a wonderful man. He's a great father, great family, and always done things the right way. So what other people say about David Padgett or anybody else being on my staff is irrelevant. He is the best guy for these student athletes who deserve the best coach this year.
And I'm not making any assertions with regard to David Padgett or anyone else. I guess what I'm trying to ask, and perhaps inartfully, is if the University of Louisville terminates you for knowing or should have known about what went on in that basketball office, is it a reasonable decision for them to make to hire someone who was also in that basketball office without that same presumption of having known or should have known?
Well, what went on in that basketball office, and each member of that staff, from video guys on, gave statements, and the statements were presented at the hearing the other day, saying that Coach Pitino every single day told us to be totally compliant to every single rule. And we went over the rules over and over and over. Away from the office, out of the office, somebody broke that commandment. We live with that. But the people in that room who are still with the program obeyed the letter of the law to the NCAA and always have.
On Tuesday, you filed suit against Adidas, the United States District Court for the Western District of Kentucky. Why did you decide to file suit against Adidas now?
Well, they terminated me without a phone call, and that's not the reason. It's not revenge for that. I felt they're largely responsible for what has gone on, and they took my love and my passion away from me. Not all of them. There were other reasons, one being one of my coaches, took my love of my life away, besides my personal family. So they are responsible for their actions. As I take ownership for two hires, they must take ownership for what they did.
Is taking ownership for the two hires that you made that are in question here, is that legitimate reason for Louisville to have made the decision they made to terminate you?
Well, the courts have to decide that, Jay. And right now, I don't think it's cause. I think that after 16 years, yes, there have been some rough times lately. And I take ownership of that. But, you know, I tell all my players in a speech, there's two things I repeat over and over to them. Tell the truth, your problems will become part of your past. Lie, your problems will become part of your future. And then I tell them the most noble profession there is to be a teacher, because you get to mentor young people and make them prosper in life. The second thing is the teacher to be a coach. If any of you guys do not make professional basketball and you want to be a coach, I will hire you. You'll start at the bottom and work your way up. No different than Van Gundy, no different than Billy Donovan, no different than David Paget, no different than Kevin Willard. Wayne Turner right now played for me in Kentucky. I made him assistant strength coach because he needed to get started in life and he wanted to go in this direction. So it's a great life. And for these players, all they have to do is do it the right way and you will prosper like the Jeff Van Gundys and the Billy Donovans of the world.
You've said publicly on multiple occasions now that you will be vindicated in this. What does vindication mean to you?
I've already been vindicated. Not by a lie detector test, just by the text messages my players have sent me, the phone calls from my assistant coaches, other people. People in football, the NFL, famous people that have just sent the most heartwarming messages to me. So I've been vindicated in my eyes. Nobody's been arrested on my staff. I've been vindicated because I have to answer to one person, we all do, whatever God you believe in. That's the most important thing.
Do you feel comfortable that you will be clear of any charge coming your way in the future?
1,000%. Because I know the truth. And like I tell my players, I'm not going to. The one thing you don't want to do is ever mislead the FBI or the U.S. attorney. You don't want to do that. You got bigger problems if you do that. You better tell the truth.
Why are you deciding to sit down for this interview? Because most attorneys might advise it's better the less that you say in a matter of this severity.
I've been told that. But I do it for my family, my friends, and my convictions.
What message that you've received has meant the most to you?
So many from my players. Funny, when Nazi Muhammad put on Facebook, somebody sent me a copy of what Nazi put on Facebook. I sat there crying. I keep texting my plan, I'll be all right, I'll be fine. Basically, stop texting me these emotional texts. Make me cry all the time. So they all mean a lot.
How has this situation, how does it differ from the fallout and the difficulty of the escort scandal?
Well, I don't think it's different, Jay. What hurts, one of your players, when something happens to him, it happens to one of your children. I'm sure you feel that way with Coach K. So when one of your players does it, rather than an assistant coach, it means more. So that was much more hurtful because it took place in Billy Minardi Hall. So they all hurt, but you don't want to ever see one of your players fail.
Do you believe you will coach again?
I don't know. I'm not sure I want to. Don't know.
Why do you say you're not sure you want to?
A week ago, a business associate of mine says, I don't want to mention his name, but, Coach, what are you doing? How about we get a workout at 10 o'clock? I said, Jim, look, I've already worked out today. He said, no, would you work out my son, put him through an individual instruction? Remember, Jay, all my life, 30-some-odd years besides professional basketball, in the mornings from 6:30 on, I get in my gym shorts, I work four guys out. We're the only program that does it at that level every day on offensive moves. 9 to 9:40, 10 to 10:40, 11 to 11:40, 8 to 8:40. Go exercise at lunch. Creature of habit. Basketball meeting at 1:30. Practice at 3. All my life this has been this way. So now my life is at 10:30 at night in downtown Miami. I'm in a gym with an ex-player and his son. Put him through an individual instruction. So it was weird, different, but who knows what, you know, I'm just trying to concentrate on today, and I'm really not concerned about the future.
You know, when you talk about your daily schedule when you're head coach at Louisville, it made me think of this reputation you have always had for being on top of every single detail. Do you think that reputation hurts you now in the court of public opinion with the way people look at this?
Yeah, again, I'm going to answer to God, and I know the truth. And does it hurt me? Of course it hurts me. You know, I want everybody to be proud of me. It hurts, but that being said, if I knew something was wrong, I immediately would have terminated anybody in that situation. I have very little, I don't have any tolerance for people that do the wrong thing in that area. Because you affect so many people by doing the wrong thing. My five children, my nieces and nephews are all affected by this. All my close friends, all the people that have worked for me. There's so many jobs at stake. My trainer, my equipment manager, my executive assistant, other assistant coaches. It affects so many people when you do. By walking into a hotel room and doing the wrong thing, it's not just my life. I'm 65. I've coached 40-plus years. I'll be fine. But what about all the other people that get affected by this with families by doing the wrong thing? And that's wrong. So if I could have known by anything, I would have found out, believe me. Because, yes, I am. I do go over every little point. But, no, I didn't know someone walked in a hotel room and was part of a sting operation. No, I didn't know that.
How does this affect your son, Richard Pitino, who's the head coach at Minnesota and was on your staff for several years?
It affects all my children. Richard's a great young coach, doing a fabulous job at Minnesota. He feels for me. He worked for me. He knows what I'm all about. And he didn't want me to do this interview with you today. He was against it. But I have to do what I believe is right. He'll be great. He's been, as much as I've trained my other assistants, the old-fashioned way, the hard way, get in early, do the right things, stay late, burn the candle at both ends. He's been times five. So he's going to do great. I'm real proud of him.
It seems like any time a coach reaches the latter part of his career, there's a healthy discussion of legacy. How do you think this affects your legacy?
Well, in Tom George's eyes, it's aces. He'll probably let go today, by the way, by the University of Louisville. For what? I have no idea. He's going to be let go because he's the best athletic director in the nation for the last 10 years. Because he stood by me, because he thought I was innocent of anything, and I did things the right way. My legacy's really not important because I'm not that significant. I think it takes you a long time to get an ounce of humility. But when you turn 50, I don't know if you're 50 yet, but you realize that humility is the most important word in the dictionary. And my legacy is really irrelevant. It's not that important.
What would you say is the state of college basketball right now?
Well, something good always happens out of bad things. This has been going on. I've been fighting this for years. You know, back when I would be recruiting you, when you were a player, I would go deal with your high school coach, number two, your parents, number one, any siblings that you may have. I would deal with them in the home, call them. Jay, I can't remember the last time I sat down with a high school coach. And he was involved in a recruiting process. I would say 95% of the time they're not. I deal more with the AAU coaches, more with other people, but not the high school coaches. So maybe some good will come out of this. Maybe we'll get shoe companies out of the industry. Dick Vitale mentioned this the other day, and I gave him the idea. The NCAA came in to me 2 years ago, just going around to all the coaches, do you have any ideas to make our game better? I said, yes. Split the country into four regions. Have high school coaches work the camp. No Adidas camp, no Under Armour camp, no Nike camp. Get the shoe companies out of basketball. Let them handle the pros, handle the colleges, but not the high school kids. Separate geographically. Have the high school coaches work it. Bring in the parents and educate them on the rules so they know the rules, what they can do, what they cannot do. And then let the kids play in front of all the college coaches run by the NCAA. The NCAA has the money. Let them do it. Let them run it. Get out of business. They thought it was a great idea, but they didn't think it was practical. I argue. I said, why not? Why wouldn't it be practical? You can get the high school coaches to do it. You get everything out of the business. They thought it was a good idea. Nothing became of it. This was 2 years ago. That needs to, moving forward, that needs to be done. We need to have the NCAA run the summer recruiting. Four different Thursdays through Sunday where the NCAA is educating everybody on the rules, telling them what to do, and then the shoe companies are out of it, runners are out of it, agents are out of it. It's run by the NCAA.
What is the influence of agents and agents runners right now in recruiting?
Look, there are good AAU programs, good people, doing it for the solid reasons. They love the game like we all do. But agents are in for one. I always tell my players, I don't want to have any involvement in picking your agents. You do that with your families. I don't want that involvement. They're, agents are all the same. They are in this business to make money. Not to, partially to help you get where you want to go, but they're going to get their 2, 3%, whatever they charge. They're in it for money. So they hire runners. They hire people. They may be involved in AAU programs, working for agents. It's all part of the system. You know it. I know it. Nothing has been done about it. The NCAA knows it. Not sure what to do about it. But now, based on what the U.S. attorney has done, something must be done now. And hopefully it will be done.
How often over the course of the time you've been at Louisville, let's say, have you encountered players or someone acting on behalf of a player that would have their hand out?
Not often, believe it or not. And this is going to sound strange. I'd probably be the last guy they would try that with. I've been coached as a head coach. I'm in the business 40-some-odd years. Only one time did I have an encounter where money was mentioned by a family member. We stood up immediately, shook hands, and went downstairs, and everybody cleared out. Only one time in all my life was that ever brought up. So I've been lucky. I've been one of the fortunate ones.
How about the things that you hear in the industry? You're recruiting against so many different competitors. Have you heard of illicit offers being made?
Oh, all the time. But a lot of times I said, that's an excuse by the assistant coach because we lost them. I always make it, coach, they were paid. We're not getting them. They were paid. And I always, that's probably an excuse in my mind. I said, let's get on with the next player. So we're not going to do it that way. Let's get on with the next guy.
Do you feel like it mitigates in your favor that you, in your time at Louisville, you've not had one-and-done players, that you have not had the highest-rated recruiting classes traditionally? Is that something that
you've factored in? Listen, I want one-and-done. I want the players that Mike has and Cal has. I want those guys. They're great players. I want it. Remember, when I was at Kentucky, I had like 5 or 7 high school players go pro. I mean, Jermaine O'Neal and Tracy McGrady, guys that we thought we were getting, Sebastian Telfair, you know, guys we thought would come. But back then you could go right right to the pros. So I would like the one and dones, but I had a stigma that, oh, he wants you to stay in school. And that wasn't the case. It's just that I feel I don't go by the rankings. You're Terry Rozier. I think, you're ranked 79th in the country. I think you're great. I want you. I think you're as good as anybody in the top 10. You're Donovan Mitchell. You're ranked 60th. I think you're as good as anybody in the top 10. Now, I didn't quite know about Russ Smith becoming a first-team college All-American from not having a Big East scholarship. But, you know, look, at Louisville, Jay, Tom and I, we spent a lot of time trying to get in the Big East. And, you know, I knew Mike Trangisi well. I knew John Marinato well. And we got in the Big East, and that was tremendous for us. And then we got in the ACC, and that was even better because of the academics of the likes of Duke and Carolina and Georgia Tech and people like that. So it was going great, and it just all came to an end by not doing it the right way.
The contradictions in the system, you had mentioned before about trying to get shoe companies out of essentially grassroots or summer basketball, but those companies are paying NCAA members and member institutions, including Louisville, millions upon millions of dollars. How do we navigate that? The fact that college basketball wants to take the money, but doesn't want involvement beyond money. The school's taking the money and then putting the apparel on the players on behalf of the shoe company.
Well, that's fine. That's endorsements. But at the grassroots level, I'm not sure why they do it at the grassroots level. I don't understand. So you're an AAU coach. A shoe company pays you $150,000. That's to pay for your travel, to pay for getting your teams together, and then you keep 50 of it for your pay for that. Now, you're competitive. You want to have the best AAU programs. You're no different than any of the college programs, and you go ahead. Some will do it the right way. Some will do it the wrong way. But why do you need them involved in doing this? Colleges, it's an endorsement deal. No different than if I'm hired by Lexus. I go do an endorsement. No different there. But at the college level, they're paying for all the other sports. See, we've been the number one moneymaker in college basketball 12 straight years.
You mean Louisville?
Louisville. Yeah, I should say.
No, past, I just want to be clear on
it. It's past tense. But we support all the other programs at the university. And when $168 million, Tom George puts together this unbelievable deal with Adidas, they support all the other programs. We wear their product. It's an endorsement deal. But there's nothing illegal about that, and there's nothing that's, when they pay you, that's going on that's wrong. But it is at the lower levels, it's affecting. I shouldn't have to recruit only certain players because they're Adidas people, and the Nike schools can only recruit Nike people. That's unfair to the young student athlete.
There was a report out recently that the prior Adidas contract, the one before the $160 million contract that Louisville just signed with Adidas, that the prior contract paid you 98% of the total value of the contract. Was that an accurate report?
That was leaked out by the Board of Trustees and the President to make me look bad. I've had a contract with Converse, Nike, Adidas. I've had the contract. This whole thing, this being put together, was because of my involvement with the program and this shoe deal. I was being paid more money in other areas. The athletic director, I was paid by Adidas. That was my deal, my endorsement deal with Adidas. Had nothing to do with the university. University did not have their deal. Now they do. They have a major, major deal. That's Tom Jurich's decision of what he wanted to do. Did he want to pay me more out of Adidas than a salary? That's up to him. But they just leaked that out to try and make me look bad, look greedy. Because I've always had that deal, Jay.
After having gone through this, and going through it now, what advice would you give to other coaches as to how they conduct their programs in light of what the industry is dealing with now?
This is your life. This is your passion. And you don't want your life taken and pulled away from you. And I think all these other schools reacted the right way, whether it's Arizona. The people that were arrested, right, at Auburn, Arizona, USC, and some Oklahoma State. They were arrested. They did nothing. There were no firings. They're collecting all the facts, seeing what's going on. There's only been one school that rushed to judgment and took the coach away from these players, and that's Louisville. And again, that's not the University of Louisville that I know and love. It's a new board of directors.
Given these allegations and given the way that you know college basketball to work, if you coached again, what controls would you want to put in place?
There's a lot going on. Look, in our case, what went on, because we monitored social media, we had everything in place. But if somebody's doing something wrong at 2 in the morning, behind closed doors, you're probably not going to know. How many times did Coach K visit you in your dormitories when you played there in your 4 years?
That's a good question. Just once.
Once in 4 years. Mm-hmm. I polled about 40 coaches, including me. In 4 years, my coach never walked into my fraternity, never walked into my dormitory. Most coaches said the same thing. I was in Billy Minotti Hall 3-4 times a week, having breakfast with the players. We watched film there the night before games. So I'm familiar with that. So if something would have leaked out about what was going on, I would have known. But it didn't leak out. It didn't leak out to social media. It didn't leak out to anybody. So there's certain things you're going to know. I trust my 5 children at night, but I don't always know what they did in high school. So my advice to coaches were you're going to have to really, really understand what the rules are all about today and how dangerous it could be if you violate one of those rules. Because I know I'm innocent. All the skeptics, all the critics, oh, he should have known. Well, then there's probably about, in my tree, about another 30 people who did not know, should have known. We did not know. I believe we shouldn't have known, but we take ownership for what went on. Should Jamie Dimon have known what was going on in London with J.P. Morgan? Probably not, but he took ownership for what he did, and he cleaned up that mess. So that's the only thing you can do is just clean it up and make sure it doesn't happen again.
The NCAA put in a rule a few years ago, on coach accountability, that essentially there's strict liability for any head coach that he or she is to know exactly what is imputed with knowing exactly what's going on in his or her program. So what an assistant may do or any wrongdoing. Do you believe that's a reasonable standard for the profession?
I don't. I was under the old contract with the Andre McGee thing. I was under the old contract, which explicitly states that if a third party does the wrong thing, I'm not held accountable. There are certain things I should be held accountable for with my staff. If I don't educate them the right way on all the rules, if I don't make sure they comply to all the rules, if I don't talk about it all the time, if I don't reinforce it all the time, then I should be held accountable. But like I said, I take ownership for these two guys, but I'm also extremely proud of the 30-plus assistant coaches that have gone on to prominence and hired other assistant coaches that do it the right way. So there's a yes and no to your question.
So, Dan, what is your first reaction to that interview?
Well, much ado about nothing. I mean, look, Rick Pitino, this was his infomercial to get out what he wanted to get out, which was, number one, he's got great support from former players, which is great.
Awesome. He should.
Yeah, yay, Rod, go fight, win. The other thing is that he wanted people to know that he passed the lie detector. Again, that's great. All of it, fantastic. He got it out. But, you know, Seth, at the end of the day, you're the head coach. You got a sex scandal. Then you got hookers. Now you got this. Hey, if you can keep your job after all that, then God bless you. If you didn't know, you should have known. And Pitino got out what he wanted to get out, and Jay did a good thing for ESPN by scoring the interview. That's all. That's the only thing I got out of it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to me. First of all, I mean, look, Rick Pitino, as a basketball coach, is a terrific basketball coach. That's great. But to me, I don't know what value. It's great that he says his players loved him. He says he did a lie detector test. Now, was that lie detector test from the FBI? Or was that his own outside group that obviously administered the lie detector test? No one knows because it wasn't stated. Number two, the one thing I really wanted to hear, you know, if you really want to get into this thing, what's your relationship with Christian Dawkins? Has Christian Dawkins been in your practices? All right. look, could have this thing transpired without Rick knowing? Yeah, it surely it could have. But in the end, I'm going to throw some names at you. All right? Tubby Smith. Billy Donovan. Herb Sendek. Richard Pitino. Kevin Keats. Kevin Willard. What do those guys represent? They represent Rick Pitino's earlier coaching career. Those are his former assistants. All right? Rick Pitino, in a lot of ways, I mean, he surrounded himself with guys that kind of grew up in the coaching profession. And I think that, look, he's got good assistant coaches right now, I'm sure, and he's put other guys into head coaching positions. But I think what's happened is instead of hiring his people, I think he's used other people to help him hire a staff, which I think has hurt him in a big picture because, you know, you are as good as your assistant coaches. And once you hire that guy, you're responsible for anything and everything that person does.
And that's what they all say when they go on to being head coaches. Oh, we trained him. We did this. So, you know, like I said, it's a deal where Rick decided that he needed his message out. He may believe the message, and maybe he did not know everything. But what you said, Seth, is 1,000% true. I mean, let's be honest. Head coaches want to take all the credit when the guy makes the NBA, want to take all the credit when the guy becomes a head coach off of his staff. But, hey, where are head coaches when one of their former players is on trial? Where's a head coach when all of a sudden there's an NCAA violation? My problem with Pitino is simply this. You can't not know everything. At some point, you got to know something, Seth. You can continue to tell us. I always thought Pitino thought that he was smarter, slicker, whatever, than everybody else. And that's what he's doing here. Like, I didn't know this. I didn't know that. Okay, fine. But you got to know something. You can't just know who's on, you know, your team when you're the head coach. And one of the things that he said, and I don't know if it was with Billis or I don't know who it was with, he said, look, I told him to slow down. We got a really good recruiting class. We got a good team. Who cares you got a good team? Who gives a rat's ass you got a good team? Who gives a rat's ass you got a good recruiting class? You got a sex scandal. You got hookers in the dorm. And now you got this. At some point, you got to take a university back and say, this is our university. Who cares you got a good recruit coming in? And the whole thing, my world is jaded. My world is jaded because I believe in the university. I believe in guys getting, it's easy to graduate guys. It's easy to get a student athlete to be a student athlete. There's nothing hard about it. It's very, very easy the way the whole thing is set up. And the whole thing with Pitino not knowing anything about anything is just like, good. You don't know anything about anything? Sit your ass out and let's move forward.
Well, you know, the other thing that came up and I think is something that wasn't discussed or should be discussed is, I mean, you know, Bowen's family was living
right
in Louisville. I mean, they were living in an extended stay hotel or residence or whatever. And I think, you know, Rick found out at a certain point, was questioning his assistants, and that's great. But I think questioning your assistants, I think it more needs to be, you know, wait a second, how's this happening? We've got to document this. I mean, you know, there are things that go on, obviously, in the recruiting process. I mean, I don't know the Bowen family. I don't know their financial situation, but you know, all of a sudden now they're living in an extended stay right in town. And is anyone working? What is happening? And I think you're right. I think in the end, head coaching accountability is hard. You can't know everything, but you can know who who's on your staff, and you can set a standard of what's acceptable and what's unacceptable. And You know, to me, I think that's the hardest thing that, you know, like you said, you can't just continually say, I didn't know, because it's your responsibility to know. And,
don't you think it's smart?
Can things happen outside of your deal? Yeah, but if you're hammering that every single day, then your guys are afraid to do wrong in a lot of ways, don't you think?
There's no question. Like, if look, the Galt House, when you say extended stay, I'm thinking about one of those little cheap hotels that the door opens to the parking lot. No, this is Galt House Hotel. Let me tell you what it says. Luxury hotel in Louisville. This isn't the Motel 27 where they're leaving a light on for you. You know what I mean? The light that's left on here is in the middle of downtown. So, yes, look, my assistants knew that I would, and I'm being literal here, throw things at them if they ever cheated and fire them on the spot if they ever cheated. Coach Knight made me feel that way, no question. So the idea that, well, I just don't know, tells me, well, then that's the culture that you, the head coach, set up. Hey, keep me out of it. Do what you got to do, and then we'll move forward, and everybody will get a head coaching job. That's how I see this, Seth. Keep me out of it. It's like the mafia thing. Keep me out of it. My made man will go do it. If it comes back on me, I don't know nothing about it. And that's the culture, so he should be fired for that, if nothing else, because that's idiotic and ridiculous.
You know, the amazing thing on thing is they've got a really good team. I mean, Louisville's team, if you look at their team this coming year, I mean, they're pretty a complete team. And they've been, you know, they've developed some players, and you know, Quentin Snyder's a senior, and, you know, you've got, you know, Dang Adele, who's, you know, explosive athlete, and you got, you know, Mahmoud, who's, you know, can run the floor, and, you know, they've Spalding. I mean, they've got a really good team. Why would you risk that? You're Louisville. Like, you know, like I always say, certain schools, you're going to get dudes. You know, you're going to get dudes. And you know, let's face it, a lot of this stuff, who knows what's going to happen in this investigation. Like, I firmly believe you're going to totally disagree with me. And I know Rick said he doesn't want to coach again. He doesn't know if he wants to coach again. Here's the deal. If he's not indicted in this investigation, all right, he's going to coach at a high level in college basketball again. Yes or no? I say yes. Not even a doubt in my mind.
I watched that interview with Jay, and what that was Patino trying to be a victim. That's what I read. I read that Patino's trying to be a victim here. I don't know if I ever want to coach again. Oh my, you know, I only answer to God. Okay, great. That's, you know, there's three things that guys always say, mostly NFL guys, but guys in general. It's in the past. I'm moving forward. They always say that. Hey, I just, you know, robbed 18 playoffs. It's in the past. I'm moving forward. The other thing is I'm a man. Yeah, I'm a man. Okay, you're a man. Great. And then the third thing is only God can judge me. Yeah, I don't care. You know, you're taking me away in handcuffs, but only God can judge me. Well, okay, great. Good for you. Only God can judge you. But, man, you got – if God is doing the judging and he is Catholic, and I'm a Catholic, he got some tough judgment coming between all the things that have been going on here lately. So, Seth, he's going to coach again. He played a bit of a victim. First big-time head coaching job, he will have his minions, his agents, working like you cannot believe, and he'll get one. And somebody, look, get fired for anything in the world except for losing. Dave Bliss has another job, for crying out loud. Get fired for anything but losing. Patino won. He'll get another job. The excuses will fly, and he'll be at the press conference looking like Rick Patino, all proud and ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree. I think he could coach as soon as this year, and you know he'll step away from it. I think he'll let this thing play out. You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with, you know, his assistants have been put on leave. It'll be interesting to see what happens with once the investigation is over with the NCAA in regards to Louisville. I mean, hey, I'll give you another question. All right, now with everything else that's going on, that banner stay up or come down at Louisville?
I am of the opinion.
How do you make this appeal? How can you now appeal?
Yeah, I don't know. I think the banner stays up. I think the NCAA.
You do?
Oh, I think they're getting ready to take Bowling Green's banner down, probably, because Louisville screwed up. I love the Tarkadian line about Cleveland's.
Cleveland State.
I don't know. I just feel like the NCAA doesn't put itself anymore in a position where they're going to go after a school like Louisville. I feel like the NCAA has lost so many lawsuits that they pretty much say, hey, man, whatever. I can't make the argument, though, Seth. I can't make the argument that those banners stay up. And with all that's going on, I can't make the argument. If you base it on what's supposed to happen, I can't make the argument that they shouldn't get the death penalty. I don't think they will. I'd say it's 90-10 against, because the death penalty supposedly crushed SMU so bad that they don't want to give it anymore. But if you go by what they said, well, within 5 years, more major violations, here you go. So, yeah, I think all that's in play, but I don't think either will happen.
It mirrors what happened at SMU. It's another major violation. Yes. While they're obviously
yes.
under. So, I mean,
which which is even more ridiculous, Seth. You're already on NCAA probation, right? But yet Kenny Johnson and whomever are on administrative leaves for being guys making deals while you're on it. That speaks to not only should Pitino have known, he should have been diligent in knowing everything once they're on probation. Seth, like, I went to Indiana when Samson already, the NCAA had already had the case by the time I got there in June, all right? There were so many things in place now for Samson, but they should have been in place when he got there. But Coach Almighty, we've seen it, Seth, basketball, football. Coach Almighty's strong, man. You know, Jurich and the compliance people, they don't want to mess with Coach Almighty. And now they've got another man. But there is no excuse for not knowing once you're already on probation, Seth.
Well, here's the thing that is surprising to me is because, you know, again, once a school has any interaction with the NCAA, the checks and balances that the athletic department puts in place is so extreme. It's weekly meetings with the compliance officer. It's documenting every single phone call, every single meeting, every single interaction that it makes it, you know, it makes it hard. It's suffocating. Like, to me, the first thing every single school in the country should have done as soon as this FBI investigation began and was exposed is you sit down with your athletic administrator, your compliance people, your head coach, and your staff of every sport, football, basketball for sure, but every sport, and say, all right, is there anything I need to know? Because that's what most times administrators do. They have that meeting to say, you know what? We sat down with our staff. This is what they communicated. And, you know, it's interesting to me that no one on Louisville staff, despite everything that's gone on, has been indicted. So, I know Kenny Johnson. And, you know, I'm quite honestly, I mean, he's a bright guy. I don't know the other assistant coach who I think is a former, I'm not sure if you ever coached in college before. I mean, Kenny Johnson worked at Indiana University for Tom Crean. Who knows who is the point person to have created this? And, you know, the one thing that I thought was kind of interesting with Rick did is that, you know, he's suing Adidas for his personal service contract and probably damages, I would think, to his reputation because obviously these things were unsolicited. So, I mean, there are so this is a soap opera. And the one guy who's the king of the soap opera, we can talk about Rick Pitino all we want. Christian Dawkins. I don't know if you read that Pete Thamel article the other day. I mean, this article, it's got to be a movie. I mean, this guy has created an illusion. He created an illusion as a player. He was a bad player who basically made fake scouting reports and got himself a prep school opportunity because he sold himself as a five-star player. All right. He became an agent, a runner, a scouting guru. He's created this illusion. And that illusion has impacted so many lives. And I think he's like 24 years old. Yet he's the focal point of this whole thing because he was the point person. And, you know, I would have loved to hear someone ask, what is your relationship with Christian Dawkins? Because it seems like he's in a lot of ways the center of this storm. And yet, you know, we haven't heard anything from him. And I don't know the guy. I mean, but I do, you know, reading these articles, they sound like fiction. They sound like this is kind of, you know, this could be Christian Dawkins could be Harry Potter.
Sid Finch.
You have to read this article. Pete Thamel wrote this article. I couldn't put the thing down. I mean, it was like that. You couldn't make it up if you don't even you don't have as good an imagination to make up my man's last 4 years, 5 years, 10 years of his life.
I know. I read it. He was a teenager that pretended to be a CEO. You know, I mean, he, you know, Lou Dawkins is, correct me if I'm wrong, is Lou Dawkins still alive? His dad?
Yeah, he's an assistant coach at Cleveland State, I think.
Yeah, okay. His dad was always, you know, a guy in basketball. Here's the problem you have in basketball, and this is the problem that people have talked about. Now there's a face of it, and it's Christian Dawkins. People always say, oh, the seedy underworld of college basketball. The guys that nobody ever sees. Well, now you see one, right? Like, I was talking to John Feinstein yesterday, right? Feinstein told me World Wide West, Feinstein's the author, Season on the Brink, Good Walk, Spoiled, that kind of thing. So, Feinstein told me yesterday, he goes, World Wide West came up to him, World Wide West, another notorious figure, came up to him and said, hey, man, you need to write a book on me. And so Feinstein looked at him and said, if you want me to write a book on you and all your dealings with college basketball and NBA and all that stuff, you realize you'll go to jail, right? A real book. And so now you have faces. Now you have, you know, Christian Dawkins. If somebody says, all right, what's who? Put a face to the CD Underground. There it is right there. Just some fraud guy making his way because, and coaches are idiots in this as well. And I've said this when I was a coach, because they just trust these guys because they think they're going to get them the player that's going to put them at Indiana, Kansas, Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, UConn, wherever. Idiots.
You know, you talk about the face. There's another side to this whole thing. And I had a chance yesterday to visit with Richard Pitino. And, you know, here he's, has maybe one of the best teams in the Big Ten. You know, his father, obviously, legendary coach Rick Pitino. And here's what he had to say about how it's impacted his relationship with his dad. I think it really was from the heart. Here's Richard Pitino on his dad and his relationship with his dad.
The last few weeks have obviously been difficult for your family and your father. Just what is your perspective on kind of what he's been through and what you've been through with the FBI investigation?
I don't think about FBI investigations or jobs or I think about my father. It's my family. You don't think about anything else. You know, if anyone, we've all have fathers and kids. When tough times hit, you focus on your father as a parent. You love him. You support him. You're not necessarily worried about anything else. You know, you just want him to be healthy and happy and at peace. And that's all I really care about. I don't care about anything else. None of that, all what people say, write, it's really, really irrelevant to me. What's relevant to me is that I am there for my dad. He's been the best father I've ever had, obviously, and he's my only father, obviously, but I'm extremely lucky to have him. He's one of my best friends, if not my best friend, and I'll be there for him forever. He's done that for me, and that's how you return the favor as a son.
Do you feel like you have to kind of, for lack of a better phrase, clear the Pitino name in terms of that, or is that not part of the equation either?
Those things are totally irrelevant to me. To the people that matter, sure. And that's not to say that fans and media are irrelevant. That's not the point. The point is, it's just the way that the world works. There's not always truth out there, and you just have to deal with it. For me, from the people that matter, certainly that's something that whenever you hear something about your father, you want to clear it up. But you're not going to be able to do that with everybody. And a good lesson for me as a young coach is, you know, I've been his son when he's been on the top and then on the bottom. And at the end of the day, the people that are there are your family, your friends, and that's for everybody. That's not a knock on anybody. It's a good reminder of what the world's really about. So I don't look at clearing people's names. I don't really focus on those things. I just focus on being the best son I could possibly be.
Coach your team and love your dad. That's all there is to it.
That's it. You know, at the end of the day, it's hard for people to understand because there's so much going on. Like, call my dad, tell him I love him, tell him I hope he's doing well. And that's what my kids will do for me when I'm growing up. And I would hope every son, daughter does for their father. You know, I'm a son whose dad's going through a tough time. We've all dealt with it. It's the real world. And life resumes, and that's really all you got
to
do.
To me, it was hard listening to Richard. I've known Richard since he's a child. I mean, and look, he loves his dad. And this is the human side of it. You know, I mean, you know, his dad is means the world to him. His dad is his mentor. His dad is his best friend. His dad is someone that he's put up on a pedestal his whole life. And to see, as a parent, to see your child hurt is one thing. But as a child, to see your father go through this in such a public fashion and everything that's gone on in the last few years, you could hear and see the pain that he's experiencing.
Yeah. And like any dad, you know, this is what I think is kind of sad, and along with exactly what you said, Seth. Yesterday, Minnesota had to answer questions about Rick Pitino coming to a game. Like, I don't even know why. I'm not really sure why, but they were asked, the administration was asked, you know, how will you handle it if Rick Pitino came to a game? Like, what are you talking about? You put him in his seats? His other son will wear a chicken outfit to the barn like he did it for you, and you just move forward. I mean, look, this is horrible. This entire last 5 years has been horrible for the Pitino family, but guess who caused it? Rick Pitino. This didn't have to happen. None of this did. And we say, all right, yeah, he's a great coach. I always think this, Seth, and I'm always wrong, but if you're a great coach, why do you need to cheat? If you're a great coach, you're a great recruiter, why do you need to cheat? I mean, I always admire Coach Knight. You say it all the time. These guys are such great coaches. Why do they need to cheat? Why don't they just get good recruit, get good players, and go play? So I'm not – count me not in the camp of Rick Pitino's the greatest coach ever. And
yeah, I mean,
this is the first time.
I understand where you're coming from, but yeah. You know, like again, I grew up in a 5-star camp.
Yeah, I did too.
You know, I had a chance to, you know, to see, you know he was the first guy. Well, you know, he was the first guy to me that went from counselor to assistant coach to head coach.
Yeah,
he was the guy that for you know the next generation. You know, we all aspire to. You know, when we were still in college, he got his first college assistant job. He actually became a head coach, I think, before I even got out of college. So he was the guy we all aspired to be. And, you know, great speaker. You know, a lot of people say he was one of the first guys that really put an emphasis on player development. Fairly innovative in terms of the style play. The use of the three-point shot at the time with the Providence team. You know, the pressing. So, I mean...
Yeah, I get that, but he cheated his brains off at Hawaii, got fired there for cheating. Then he got a life jacket because everybody knew him in the East. So, and then all of a sudden we just assume, like I did a great job with Providence. Hell, I played with Delray Brooks. Delray Brooks could not play in the Big Ten today, tomorrow, the next day. He goes to Providence, they play a zone, he shoot three-point shots. Next thing you know, I'm looking up and my friend Delray's in the Final Four in 87. So I know he did a great job, but when you cheat, when you start out, And then all, I just have a different opinion. I know good people do bad things. I get all the hell. I've done a ton of bad things. But I never buy into a guy if they feel like they got to cheat to win. And don't tell me that they didn't because they did. They were going to go play with Brian Bowen until this got discovered. And don't tell me that's the first guy. Just you can't tell me that. I'm sorry. I just don't believe that. This is the first big-time recruit that ever stayed at the Galt House, that ever a deal was made to go play for Rick Pitino. They're already on probation for other stupidity. So I get East Coast guys love the guy. I do. I saw him speak when I was a camper. Myself, a guy named Aubrey Sherrod, Chris Mullen, were sitting at 5-star camp. Pitino's 26 at Boston University. And swear to God, he got done beating everybody one-on-one, including Chris Mullen. And I'm sitting there going, man, I just got to meet this guy. So I get it. I get the whole Pitino thing from 5-star. That was at 5-star during, you know, one of them lecture things. So I get it, but I go back to what Coach Knight always said. If these guys were such great coaches and great recruiters, why is their team on probation? Why don't they just trust themselves?
Yeah. Look, this is going to be an ongoing saga throughout the season. I'll say it again. I think this season could potentially have an asterisk. I think we're going to see changing faces of teams, programs, players, coaches throughout the season, and we're just going to, you know, we'll be back next week. We'll probably, unfortunately, be talking to some aspect of this. And the one
we didn't
thing
even
did
get into
is,
North Carolina.
Yeah, I know. the one thing that I will say is that even, you know, away from this, there are good people that make bad decisions And those bad decisions will impact some of those guys and their children and their families. And to me, even though what they did was wrong, I feel for the human side of that, after, especially after listening to Richard Pitino yesterday and seeing the pain, you know, in his voice, in his eyes, and probably in his heart.
So yeah,
we'll be back next week. We'll take some student body questions next week. But Gabe, you're in command, baby. You're taking over, baby. And Courtside is in good shape with Greenberg and Dockage.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the NBA Lockdown Podcast, available in the ESPN app. Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage.